The Best Podcast in Baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
I'll put it on the clock. We'll have 2 minutes, 10 prospects, and we're good to go, right?
Yeah, we can do that. It's kind of like a little PTI.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, prospect.
Prospect talk. I can't think of an eye.
Initiated. Oh, look at that. It even has an alarm. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined today by the guy who carried the coverage here on February 29th, 2024. Special day because it only comes around once every 4 years. It is, of course, leap day in which we're recording this. And I am, of course, talking to Daniel Guerrero, baseball writer at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, who had today a story, Daniel, about four guys ready for their leap years, right?
Right. I mean, fits the theme of the every 4 years, four prospects to watch make leaps this year in different facets, right? I mean, it's not necessarily all the they're not all on the same timeline, right? I mean, every prospect's different. Guys are looking for different things each year. And obviously with some brainstorming with you, I mean, figured four leaps for four prospects that will be fun to watch or interesting to watch or any adjective you kind of put next to that but are worth keeping tabs on this year.
Well, here at the podcast, we don't have to be limited to just four. So here's my idea, all right? Okay. Are we ready?
Yeah.
We got about 25 minutes here, right? Maybe 27 minutes here between interviews, between trying to track down the latest info and everything, and then turn it around for SDLToday.com. Mm-hmm. How about we talk about 10 prospects, 2 minutes each? Are you good? I'll put it on the clock. We'll have 2 minutes, 10 prospects, and we're good to go, right?
Yeah, we can do that. It's kind of like a little PTI.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Prospect, what is the...
Prospect talk. I can't think of an eye.
Initiated. Initiative, yeah. We'll workshop the adjective. But the idea, 2 minutes each, 10 prospects with Daniel Guerrero here on the best podcast in baseball. All right. I got the timer set. Are you ready to go?
Yeah.
All right. Introduce the first prospect. Here we go.
Well, I guess we'll start with the first four. The one that led the list that's on STLToday.com and in the Post-Dispatch is Ian Bedell. Bedell.
Mizzou kid.
Yeah, as many of listeners know, I mean, Mizzou product. Mizzou graduate, I mean, got his degree, finished his degree there, and really did not pitch at all in his first 2 years, right? I mean, came into pro baseball during the pandemic in 2020, had his last collegiate season cut short, had an entire minor league season wiped out, and then finally gets into a game in 2021, gets injured, has Tommy John, tries to get back in 2022, has setbacks, gets back late in 2022, and really has barely a sample, not even really like a Costco-sized sample of professional baseball. I mean, he threw less than 9 innings, so 2 years lost, right, of development in as a minor leaguer, and he finally gets healthy this year. Has a strong season with high A Peoria, becomes the Midwest Pitcher of the Year, gets up to about 96 innings, ERA under 2.5, about 106 strikeouts, and his leap this year is really needing to leap levels. He was a part of that 2020 draft class that we're now seeing in the majors, right, with Jordan Walker, Mason Winn, Alec Burleson was the first to get there. I mean, you have Tin Cans kind of climbing up that radar of a guy who...
Newcomer Thomas DeJacy,
right? So, I mean, for Ian Bedell, this will be a big year for him to leap multiple levels because hasn't pitched in Double-A yet. And it really all starts here in spring training. I mean, he's one of 30 Cardinals prospects in Step Camp, which is, you know, the Cardinals' early program for minor leaguers. And as I was told by Farm Director Gary LaRock, that Ian Bedell competes here and that this is where it all starts for him to make those leaps up the system.
All right, very good. You got the next prospect for us here. We got 2 minutes on the clock. Oh, look at that. It even has an alarm. All right, here we go.
Number two, and another one on that list that was number two on that list, who might be close to two on prospect list as we kind of go along, but Won Bin Cho. I mean, you look at the size and the tools and just everything that he possesses. I mean, and then you look at the age, right? He's only 20 years old, doesn't turn 21 until I think August. And man, I mean, this is a guy who, you look at what he did last year in Palm Beach, right? He was part of that 2021 international signing class, headlined by Jonathan Mejia, with Luis Rodriguez, a catcher from Venezuela, and then Juan Bincho, right, a teenager from South Korea, has pretty good eye at the plate. I mean, had a walk rate above 14%. I mean, on base percentage around 370, hit for about 270 average, and played around you know, the three outfield spots, mostly in right field. Stole 32 bases.
Really?
So it's like you see that, you see the speed, you see the strength that's kind of coming along. I mean, he's
the size,
right?
I mean,
and you see that projection, right? So I mean, this is
left-handed bat,
and you even just watching him on the backfield yesterday, right? He's going up against Chen Weilin, who a pitcher from Taiwan, and has some high velocity, and Juan Bincho, you know, just hitting screamers up the middle. I mean, he's going to be somebody who's very, very interesting to watch. And he's kind of ranked around like that middle tier of Cardinals prospects. But when you look at him coming into this season, what he did last year in Palm Beach in 105 games, and you look at this year, it's like, okay, this is the year that he can leap up rankings. I mean, he's a guy who has a lot of projection.
He could be a top five prospect for them. Also, when he made his Grapefruit League day, all right, man. Well, he played center field. I'm going to sneak that in there. Okay, next guy.
Next guy who's also on that list is also in big league camp for the first time in his career is catcher Leonardo Bernal.
Oh, yeah, switch hitter, right?
Right, switch hitting catcher, also is going to turn 21 this year. Young, but same thing. Receives well. I mean, has kind of a sharp mind for the game at a young age too. I mean, I remember last year hearing that, you know, he when the ABS, the automated ball strike system, was being tested in the challenge system, that, you know, he had a lot of success doing that and just understanding the strike zone and having that confidence to do that. But then, and you look at what he does at the plate, right? A switch hitter, pretty even splits when it comes to just hitting for average against lefties and righties. I think you saw a little bit more success when it just comes to hitting for slugging percentage. I mean, he had 14 of his 15 doubles, I think, were against right-handed pitching. He's a guy who can leap into, as you know, I know you put it the other day, leap into consciousness of a key prospect moving forward. I mean, when you look at same thing, the projection, the age, what he offers from both sides of the ball, offense and defense, and at both sides of the plate. And then, you know, him being in big league camp, this could really be a kind of foundational thing for him. I mean, just being around Wilson Contreras and Yvonne Herrera, and just receiving big league pitching. I mean,
that's a big,
bullpens.
Yeah.
I mean, and just being in, around that environment, right? I mean, you look at that recipe and it's like, okay, this is a guy who can take a leap up levels this year, leap up rankings, and leap into being, you know, a key prospect.
Yeah, you think about like what a catcher gets out of being in major league camp. It's not just being around the other catchers, the advanced catchers, but it's also seeing advanced stuff. I mean, they're not seeing pitchers who can, you know, go and I'm going to stop the alarm here before it goes off, but they're not seeing you know, the same kind of control of pitchers that they will at their level. Quick story about Bernal is one of the things that really attracted the Cardinals to him is his leadership, you know, like his ability to kind of command a game when he was a young guy and he was playing for one of the for the national team. He was like directing traffic and they saw him kind of keep control of his team and really guide it. And that stuck with the Cardinals. That stuck with the scouts in part because they're like, well, okay, look, he already has this, whether it's innate or whether it's learned, this feel for a catcher who controls the game. All right, we'll restart here. Got 2 minutes. We're moving on to prospect number four. Well, I got the alarm at the beginning. All right, my bad.
All right, cool. Prospect number four and the fourth one on that list.
I should leave the tech to you.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Prospect number four and the fourth one on that list, who isn't really going to, I mean, might not jump out on many radars at all, but this leap will be a leap stateside. Yordelin Peña, who is an outfield prospect, played the last 2 years in the Dominican Summer League, also a part of that international signing class with Mejia and Juan Bincho and Luis Rodriguez.
Oh, really? Okay.
And
so that gives you perspective as to where he is as far as how old he was and also how far away he was. I mean, that he spent the past 2 years in the Dominican.
Yeah. And then obviously, I mean, being that young, I mean, the Cardinals Academy, I mean, the Dominican Summer League is really to give guys a lot of structure, not just, you know, throw them into pro ball, but kind of get their feet wet into just, okay, what is this going to look like, and have a kind of a stable environment. And after a couple years, a couple seasons in the DSL, was part of the got, you know, the DSL All-Star nods in back-to-back years, mm-hmm. And is expected to make his stateside debut. I mean, he's somebody who might not jump off the radar or make prospect lists, but he's somebody who, you know, if you're just kind of looking for somebody to keep tabs on, that's going to be making their debut, playing for one of the full season affiliates or even in the complex league, like, this is a guy that, you know, that was notable, a notable signing in 2021, and, you know, could be a notable prospect to just keep an eye on at that level.
What is he defensively? Like, what's the word on how he is defensively?
Yeah, so, I mean, he played a lot of same thing, like, out just corner out, right field. But, I mean, he has some speed that can translate into playing center field full time. But, yeah, I mean, he offers that option.
All right, moving on to prospect number four.
Five.
2 minutes. I'm getting all my numbers confused. Prospect number five, here we go.
Well, this is another one that kind of falls off list, but had a strong season last year.
And thanks for keeping count.
Oh, you're welcome. Noah Mendlinger is a name that...
Oh, I'm glad you brought... Yeah, he got into a game recently.
Yeah, he got into a game recently. He was a part of Team Israel last year in the WBC. Played a lot of games for Peoria and then a lot of games for Springfield. Played some infield, played outfield. He kind of stuck in right field for Springfield last year down the stretch after he got promoted. And his bat-to-ball skills are some of the best in the organization.
Really?
So, I mean, when you look at that, when you look at kind of his path, he went to Division III school out in Georgia, came to the Cardinals as an undrafted free agent. And, his, you know, essentially that's kind of an uphill battle to climb and, you know, has became a regular everyday player and a top-of-the-order hitter. I mean, a leadoff hitter for Springfield, somebody who kind of set the tone for them. And you just look at that flexibility, right? I mean, he came in as a second baseman. He's played second. He's played third. He's played left. He's played right. And just talking to him last year at the end of the season, you know, he mentioned that, you know, just trying to pick up kind of anything he can do to get his name into the lineup. And it kind of fits his path here. I mean, just kind of finding a way to get an opportunity. But when you look at kind of what he offers at the plate, right, and his ability to just kind of not chase a whole lot. I mean, put the ball in play, doesn't strike out a ton. Another kind of versatile defender, doesn't, you know, necessarily have the power. But, I mean, when you look at just what he does and gives you an at-bat that somebody who's going to put the ball in play and somebody who can play multiple positions, he's a really down-ballot prospect who can, you know, just provide some depth in the system.
And we've seen guys like that, you know, make a lot of noise as contributors and maybe become more Brendan Donovan. Mm-hmm. Thomas DeJacy is on the brink, but then, you know, that's kind of how Tommy Edman got up, right?
Right.
All right, here we go. Halfway through, prospect number six.
Well, I guess this is the one that you could pick is like maybe he makes a leap to the majors because of his 40-man roster status. But Pedro Baez comes to mind, right, when you look at the Cardinals' catching depth and what they did this offseason to protect him from the Rule 5 draft,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, he's somebody who the pitching staff, I mean, has nice – I mean, I don't want to say – I don't know if nice words is kind of an understatement.
Yeah, good rapport.
But
yeah.
A good rapport with throwing
– I'm sorry for almost cutting you off there.
No, that's fine. I kind of had a loss for words. when you look at Pedro Páez and kind of what he offers, same thing as the defense-first catcher. Had some improved offensive numbers last year in Springfield. Was one of their regular contributors in, you know, lineup for, mm-hmm. for a team that, you know, was one of three Cardinals affiliates to make the playoffs. I mean, he was a guy who also went to the Fall League in 2022,
yeah.
Went unprotected that winter, and Cardinals made the choice to add him to the 40-man roster this year. I mean, provides that depth behind Wilson Contreras and Yvonne Herrera for, you know, if there's a need at the big league level for backup catcher, for, you know, just somebody up there. I mean,
yeah. And he has a lively bat, and right. He also has, like, at least some big league familiarity because of the time he spent with Wilson Contreras, but also Trevino of the Yankees. Mm-hmm. Over the past 2 years in the offseason, Páez has spent time in San Antonio with Trevino there working, and it's one of the, you know, Páez came in, and he was really concerned about kind of how stiff he was, how stiff his hips were, and they worked on a new setup. So he's one of the one-knee-down guys and has really found that not only can he do well receiving and flexibility wise, but it's also made him one of the better framers. And last year he was one of the best framers, and one of the in camp. Man, that timer is really, really, yeah. I wonder how many people are timing at home as they listen to it. But, you know, really interesting story, really advanced defensively. And you're right, has a good feel for the catchers. All right, moving on. Number seven.
Number seven is a guy who could leap back into expectations, I would say. Mm. Joshua Baez played full season last year with Palm Beach, and strikeouts were a problem. I mean, he had one of the highest strikeout rates just among hitters in the Cardinals system. But when you look at him and you saw, I mean, okay, in 2021, he was a second-round pick right behind Michael McGreevy, somebody who was, you know, Cardinals had a kind of a sway from his commitment to Vanderbilt.
Right.
And, you know, had in 2022, injury-limited year, the hamate bone injury, came back, and he had some productive numbers in a limited amount of time, and then goes into this year and, you know, just struggles at the plate. But, I mean, this will be a big year as he's entering really his second, what would it be, 22, so this would be his second full season of pro baseball to kind of get back on track of expectations, right, being a second-round pick. I mean, that obviously that carries a lot of weight, and that's something that I mean, I remember the last time speaking to him, I mean, it's something who, you know, he's a very leveled guy. I mean, you can see the maturity with him, and just understanding, like, okay, like, the goal is to be healthy and to be productive, and obviously that's going to be a key for him, right? He finally had a healthy season last year with Palm Beach.
Yeah.
And now it's time to see that projection, right? Guy who had, you know, described as having raw power defensively, has played some center, kind of sticks more in right because of a strong arm. I mean, high school was throwing 97 off the mound.
Yeah, and he's considered to still have the strongest arm in the organization.
I mean, Baseball America has
him. Outfield.
Yeah, outstrong. Strongest outfield arm. So, I mean, you see those tools with him, and now I think this is going to be a big year for him to have that projection turn into production for him and get above the low A level.
What do you hear about, like, that power? Is it a matter of finding the swing and miss? Like, did he finding more contact to get the power, or what do you hear about? I mean, he did strike out a bunch, but did he hit for enough power to allow for some strikeouts? Is that where the balance is? Or where is the power development for him?
Especially when you just look at the numbers, there is a need to see that power arrive. And I think just a part of it's going to be cutting down on the chase.
Okay.
And I think that's kind of where it's going to come from, right? Of him, just getting bad on the ball. I mean, because that's what you see. I mean, just looking at him in lives, I mean, you see that, right? The ball jumps off his bat. I mean, when he makes solid contact. But, I mean, it's just a matter of, you know, just cutting down on the whiff rate.
Yeah, because he doesn't really have, like, a complex swing. Like, there's not a lot to his swing. Sometimes you go down and you see the prospects and you go, well, okay, there's just a lot going on to their swinger. Even Mason Wynn, right, he's talked about that, you know, he had to kind of calm and quiet. That's what the word he used was, quiet his swing. But Baez doesn't have a whole lot going on to generate the power. And that's why I asked. I just didn't know, like, if the power is just reliant on being a guy who crushes fastballs, or if it's just, you know, if he might have to give up some of that power to make up more contact, then he's a way different hitter than they thought they were getting.
Yeah, no, I get you. I mean, but I think, I mean, obviously we're, you know, he's still very young. So, I mean, I think there are going to be some changes that we'll see in 2024, you know, which is kind of a finding that balance, like you mentioned.
All right, moving on. I'm going to start the clock again. Here we go. Next prospect.
Next one. What is it, 8?
Yeah.
I think we're going to see a leap in sample size. I think that'll be a big one for this next one, and it's Cooper Jerpy. I mean, we saw him in his first Grapefruit League game the other day, and I mean, you see it. I mean, you see as he's even described it. You know, that funky kind of stuff that he offers. I mean, and the swing and miss and the deceptiveness. I think just the leap in sample size is going to be huge for him, because last year he was only limited to about 40 innings in the regular season, made up for a few of those innings in the fall league, mm-hmm. Mostly out of the bullpen, which was something that was, you know, different to him, even having only started, you know, when he was at Oregon State and even coming into pro ball. But I think when you look at the next big thing for his development, that's got to be what it is. I mean, he's first round pick from 2022. And, you know, he was described as somebody who was going to be a fast riser in the organization. And obviously, I mean, the injury, the elbow surgery, the arthroscopic surgery that he had last year over the summer, I mean, held him back from a first full season in the majors. I mean, sorry, in the minors. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's here in big league camp for the first time. I mean, he's one of the younger guys out there. He's kind of one of the offers one of the different looks that kind of lies within the Cardinals' pitching pipeline. I mean, with a lot of the influx of guys they got at the deadline. But yeah, I mean, if there's any leap that he needs to make, it's really just sample size and staying healthy. So you can kind of see what Cooper Jerpy fully mm-hmm. offers.
Yeah, he had two pieces removed from his elbow that were about 1 centimeter long, so no small thing. Yeah. Also, his delivery is so deceiving mm-hmm. that it tied up the TrackMan in knots. Mm-hmm. They didn't know what to do the other day. I think it was the TrackMan. Maybe it was one of the other systems that tracks pitches. Regardless, it defied it. They didn't know what to do with it. They had no idea how to classify some of his pitches just because of the deception on him and the movement on him. It was such that it was just a bit off. All right, prospect number 9.
This next one I think is going to just... It's weird because he made the leap last year, and I think it'll be another leap year for him, I guess, to build off of. But Edwin Nunez is kind of an interesting...
Oh, I'm glad you brought him up.
...down on the farm. I mean, he was another one of those guys that went to the fall league this last year. But when you look at the strides he made with correcting just command issues in 2022, walked a ton of guys. I mean, and he has, you know, offers that high velocity out of the bullpen. Is a guy who's gone multiple innings out of the bullpen as well, which I find kind of interesting, right? I mean, he's not limited to one or two. But, I mean, he's offered 3 innings in relief. And... also, another young guy. I mean, he got up to AA last year. I mean, which was a big leap because, I mean, he started the year in low A. And mm-hmm. Before that, I mean, he was just kind of bouncing around between Palm Beach and the Complex League. But he comes in and was a key piece in Palm Beach's bullpen early in the year. Offered the same for Peoria. And then, you know, when Springfield made the playoffs... he was one of the few guys that got a promotion up a level just for the playoffs.
What does he throw?
Obviously, like, the main thing that attracts you is the high velocity with the fastball. I mean, mm-hmm. slider is also a key piece to his arsenal. And I think you saw that in the fall league, right? I mean, he was going up against, you know, guys, obviously, like, the fall league is for many people, you know, going up against guys from different levels. And I think you saw a little bit of you saw that learning curve that, you know, there's still a lot of work that for him and for a lot of development for him. But I mean, when you look at guys who leap last year and can continue leaping, I mean, he's one of the ones that stands out. I mean, he's in step camp right now. Saw him pitch yesterday on the backfield, same thing.
Really?
In lives, I mean, one of the guys he faced was Chase Davis, who, you know, was a first round pick last year, and stuff, I mean, is electric.
Oh, excellent timing. Alright, here we go. Are we on the last one?
Are we? I guess so. Who's a prospect number 10?
Yeah.
Well, I guess a prospect that I think is going to leap into more. Oh, I guess leap. Well, he's already leaped into pro ball. I don't know what leap. I guess adjective to put onto it. But I think I just mentioned it right now. But Chase Davis is one who I think will continue mm-hmm. to leap onto. I don't know if it's conversations or
That works.
Just minds.
Yeah.
But I mean, we saw him briefly last.
I mean, he's leaping out of like being a number one pick, which comes with a lot of like attention and potential and everything like that, to actually having tangible professional baseball success that leaps him into a discussion or even onto a depth chart.
Right, because I mean, he got a short run last year at Palm mm-hmm. Beach. I mean, it was kind of a whirlwind thing for him too. I mean, Wright gets drafted in July, signs, makes the visit to Busch Stadium, takes BP, and then a couple days later finds himself in a game for Palm Beach. I mean, it's a quick transition for him. And he just talking to him the other day, I mean, mentioned, you know, some of the struggles and some of the things that'll come with it. But I mean, it's one of those things where I think you look at kind of just that exposure, right? And that's something that, you know, is going to play a role into just helping him get settled in and starting to figure out minor league pitching. It, you know, played in the Pac-12, which isn't going to exist anymore anytime soon. You know, and got a run. And I think one of the things for him, too, was getting a run at center field. All the games he played on defense were in center field. Mm. And, you know, it's kind of interesting to see, right? Because, I mean, he was kind of more of a corner guy at Arizona, but gets that opportunity in pro ball. And, you know, you could expect to see, I mean, possibly see out there this year.
Well done. So that's 10 prospects, 2 minutes each. We made it through. We didn't lose count. We only went over a couple times, Daniel. And there's one last topic then that's left to discuss when we're going off of a leap day theme. Mm-hmm. And that is the prospect or young player who is going to leap into contribution in the majors. The obvious answer is probably Mason Wynn, right? I mean, he's going to get the most opportunity to be the most impactful rookie and probably will be a candidate for the National League Rookie of the Year. I mean, he's going to go into it probably as an early candidate, maybe even early favorite for the National League Rookie of the Year. So there's no question that he's the one that the Cardinals have identified and counted on, even with the addition this week of Brandon Crawford, to leap into contributions. Mm-hmm. Is there another, as Yoda once said? I'm hitting you with okay.
I like Star Wars. I mean, I don't know it by heart though. So sorry for any Star Wars fans out there.
And I don't think they're listening anymore. It's fine. Yeah. Who is there? Another? Is there another young player that you think could come and impact this team? I mean, there's Granillo stands out. I mean, Graceffo. Could he do it? Graceffo.
Right.
You know, you got a couple of the Victor Scott the second.
I mean, those are three. Definitely three strong candidates, right? I mean, you look at Andre Granillo and the same thing. Late round pick, 14th round pick in 2021, got up to Memphis this past year, went to the Fall League and had a good showing out there in the Fall League. Has pitched in, you know, late innings and at every level he's been on, from being in college at UC Riverside to Peoria to Springfield. You know, offers kind of a 1-2 mix with the power fastball and a slider that, you know, gets a lot of his swing and miss, has one of the most effective K rates in the system when you look at just his first full season in 2021. I mean, certainly a strong candidate. And then Gordon Graceffo was another one, right? I mean, you look at just his first outing the other day. I mean, the stuff and the changes he made this past offseason, right? I mean, he kind of worked on more consistency with his delivery and his windup with pushing off on the rubber from the same spot and things like that he believes are going to help him with better command, with better command and just kind of more effective use of kind of mm-hmm. his pitch shape and kind of the way what he does out there. And man, Victor Scott, I mean, you look at what he's done in games. I mean, it's one of those things where you can't just look at the box score with him. Mm-hmm. Because even the other day, right, he lines out, hits a hard liner to right field, sharp grounder up the middle. I mean, doesn't get on base in either ones, but I mean, that was the line out to right field was the hardest hit ball, or one of the hardest hit balls in that game, and that was against Boston.
Yeah, he had the hardest hit ball, the fastest sprint speed, and the fastest thrown ball by a position player.
Right, and I mean, plays a premier defensive spot and, you know, was a gold glover at the minor league level at that mm-hmm. spot last year. You look at the way speed has changed the game, and I know you've talked about this and written about it with, you know, you look at like Corbin Carroll and the Diamondbacks and
right.
how that, you know, influence and impacts the game. And I mean, we saw it in West Palm Beach the other day, right? When Victor Scott and Mason Wynn are both on base and kind of the chaos they can create. We saw it with Victor Scott's Grapefruit League debut in Sport St. Lucie that you were there for. Right, and then you kind of think about, okay, what the status of Tommy Edman and kind of when he's going to be back. And I kind of look at the Cardinals' outfield options. Obviously, Dylan Carlson's, you know, right there in the mix is, you know, the fourth outfielder. But, I mean, you look at Victor Scott and you look at the leaps that he took last year and how quickly he's risen through the system. I mean, you begin to think like, okay, like, is this going to be the guy that's going to have the impact at the major league level at some point this year? And I mean, it feels kind of, if this is a magic eight ball, I mean, and you shake it, it kind of, I think you would get the, you know, trending towards that way, or, you know. Right.
Yeah, it's a tried and true Cardinal tradition where the young guy comes over, takes over playing time in center field. I mean, you can go back to John Jay did it, and, you know, and before him, Colby Rasmus did it, and John Jay then did it from Colby Rasmus, and Harrison Bader did it from somebody, and then, you know, Harrison Bader, you know, is traded because the Cardinals feel like they have cover in center field as Dylan Carlson plays it. Then, of course, you have Tommy Edmond doing it this past year, so it's become somewhat of a trend around here where the guy who opens the year in center field at some point in time during a contending season, there's a young guy who starts pushing for more playing time, whether it's because of his defensive ability in Harrison Bader's case, or because of his, you know, consistency and knack for providing both offensively and defensively, John Jay, or, you know, just superb defense, switch hitter, and reliability in Tommy Edmond. And then, of course, now you have this aspect where Victor Scott is an excellent defensive player who's learning to improve in the at the speed of the game, which sounds interesting to say for him, but also then has this speed component that just roars at every level. It's just remarkable. And if you have that, I mean, you could might be sooner than anybody expects, except for Victor Scott and people like you, Daniel, who have long ranked him aggressively and said that this guy is coming. Be real interesting between him and Thomas Sagesi, who gets a crack at the major leagues and who makes the most of it that first time.
Right, right. I mean, it would be very fitting. I mean, like you mentioned, be a very fitting way for Victor Scott. I mean, and kind of how he's always been described, right, as somebody who's fast and quick and, I mean, seems kind of like a symbolic pipeline, you know, like a pipeline that rid his path to the up the prospect pipeline. It's like quick. I mean, it certainly feels that way.
He'll arrive as he plays. Thank you very much, Daniel Guerrero. That's St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Daniel Guerrero. You can read all of his stuff at stltoday.com. He is a minor league beat writer, contributes on the major league side, but we're very happy at the Post-Dispatch that we're one of the few places that has a minor league beat writer who brings you constant coverage of the Cardinals system, not just the players, but also the trends and also how they're trying to re-engineer it to be more productive, especially when it comes to pitching development. Daniel, thank you very much for spending part of your leap day with me and for putting together this this podcast. We thought it'd be interesting to put a timer on it. We clearly need more work on how to operate the timer, but it was good. It was good. It kind of gave us a pace, right?
Yeah. Well, we have 4 years to kind of perfect this for the next leap year.
That was well put. The Best Podcast in Baseball is brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find it at stltoday.com, where you can find the constant Cardinals coverage. You can also find that in the pages of the Post-Dispatch. The Best Podcast in Baseball is available on iTunes, where you can rate and review the podcast. Of course, you can subscribe to it there as well. Subscriptions make the sponsorships possible. Sponsorships make this podcast possible. Daniel, let's race back over there and get to asking the manager some questions. Thank you very much for joining me. We'll have another. The Best Podcast Baseball is brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. We'll have another one soon. Talk to you later.